Today is the 22nd day of August. Welcome to the Daily Audio Bible. I am Brian, and as always, it is wonderful to be here. A privilege and an honor, and I'm grateful to be here with you today as we gather again and take another one of our steps forward. Here we are, end of the week. So it's our tradition around here to just huddle up again, like we do at the beginning and the end of every week. Here we are, it's the end of the week. We look back at the highs and the lows, because we looked at this week before it ever began. Now we're at the ending and we've lived it. It's not a part of our future now. It's a part of our past. And so we can learn from the past. It teaches us much about ourselves if we pay attention to it. And so, yeah, we just take a minute here and think about the high points and the low points. And maybe even commit ourselves to spending some time, a few minutes today, writing down the high points and the challenges that we faced. Because we're learning our patterns and we're learning ourselves. And that is eyes to see and ears to hear. And that is, well, we're ever going to grow up. We're ever going to move toward wholeness. That is one of the places that we got to go. We only have control over our own selves. So here we are. We've made it through another week. And in the Bible has led us now into the book of Job. So we are spending some time, because the Bible has led us here, into painful places in our own lives. And so let's begin today, Job chapters 4 through 7. Then Eliphaz the Temanite replied, "Should anyone try to speak with you when you are exhausted? Yet who can keep from speaking? Indeed, you have instructed many and have strengthened weak hands. Your words have steadied the one who was stumbling and braced the knees that were buckling. But now that this has happened to you, you have become exhausted. It strikes you, and you are dismayed. Isn't your piety your confidence, and the integrity of your life your hope? Consider, who has perished when he was innocent? Where have the honest been destroyed? In my experience, those who plow injustice and those who sow trouble reap the same. They perish at a single blast from God and come to an end by the breath of his nostrils. The lion may roar and the fierce lion growl, but the teeth of young lions are broken. The strong lion dies if it catches no prey, and the cubs of the lioness are scattered. A word was brought to me in secret. My ears caught a whisper of it. Among unsettling thoughts from visions in the night, when deep sleep comes over men, fear and trembling came over me and made all my bones shake. I felt a draft on my face, and the hair on my body stood up. A figure stood there, but I could not recognize its appearance. A form loomed before my eyes. I heard a whispering voice. Can a mortal be righteous before God? Can a man be more pure than his maker? If God puts no trust in his servants, and he charges his angels with foolishness, how much more those who dwell in clay houses, whose foundation is in the dust, who are crushed like a moth? They are smashed to pieces from dawn to dusk. They perish forever while no one notices. Are their tent cords not pulled up? they die without wisdom. Call out. Will anyone answer you? Which of the holy ones will you turn to? For anger kills a fool, and jealousy slays the gullible. I have seen a fool taking root, but I immediately pronounced a curse on his home. His children are far from safety. They are crushed at the city gate with no one to rescue them. The hungry consume his harvest, even taking it out of the thorns. The thirsty pant for his children's wealth. For distress does not grow out of the soil, and trouble does not sprout from the ground. But humans are born for trouble as surely as sparks fly upward. However, if I were you, I would appeal to God and would present my case to him. He does great and unsearchable things, wonders without number. He gives rain to the earth and sends water to the fields. He sets the lowly on high, and mourners are lifted to safety. He frustrates the schemes of the crafty so that they achieve no success. He traps the wise in their craftiness so that the plans of the deceptive are quickly brought to an end. They encounter darkness by day, and they grope at noon as if it were night. He saves the needy from their sharp words and from the clutches of the powerful. So the poor have hope, and injustice shuts its mouth. See how happy is the person whom God corrects. So do not reject the discipline of the Almighty, for he wounds, but he also bandages. He strikes, but his hands also heal. He will rescue you from six calamities. No harm will touch you in seven. In famine, he will redeem you from death, and in battle from the power of the sword. You will be safe from slander and not fear destruction when it comes. You will laugh at destruction and hunger and not fear the land's wild creatures. For you will have a covenant with the stones of the field, and the wild animals will be at peace with you. You will know that your tent is secure, and nothing will be missing when you inspect your home. You will also know that your offspring will be many, and your descendants like the grass of the earth. You will approach the grave in full vigor, as a stack of sheaves is gathered in its season. We have investigated this, and it is true. Hear it and understand it for yourself. And Job answered, "If only my grief could be weighed, and my devastation placed with it on the scales. For then it would outweigh the sand of the seas. That is why my words are rash. Surely the arrows of the Almighty have pierced me. My spirit drinks their poison. God's terrors are arrayed against me. Does a wild donkey bray over fresh grass, or an ox low over its fodder? Is bland food eaten without salt? Is there flavor in an egg white? I refuse to touch them. They are like contaminated food. If only my request would be granted, and God would provide what I hope for, that he would decide to crush me, to unleash his power and cut me off. It would still bring me comfort, and I would leap for joy in unrelenting pain, but I have not denied the words of the Holy One. What strength do I have that I should continue to hope? What is my future that I should be patient? Is my strength that of stone, or my flesh made of bronze? Since I cannot help myself, the hope for success has been banished from me. A despairing man should receive loyalty from his friends, even if he abandons the fear of the Almighty. My brothers are as treacherous as a wadi, as seasonal streams that overflow and become darkened because of ice, and the snow melts into them. The wadis evaporate in warm weather. They disappear from their channels in hot weather. Caravans turn away from their routes, go up into the desert and perish. The caravans of Tima look for these streams. The traveling merchants of Sheba hope for them. They are ashamed because they had been confident of finding water. When they arrive there, they are disappointed. So this is what you have now become to me. When you see something dreadful, you are afraid. Have I ever said, give me something, or pay a bribe for me from your wealth, or deliver me from the enemy's hand, or redeem me from the hand of the ruthless? Teach me, and I will be silent. Help me understand what I did wrong. How painful honest words can be. But what does your rebuke prove? Do you think that you can disprove my words, or that a despairing man's words are mere wind? No doubt, you would cast lots for a fatherless child and negotiate a price to sell your friend. But now, please look at me. I will not lie to your face. Reconsider. Don't be unjust. Reconsider, my righteousness is still the issue. Is there injustice on my tongue? Or can my palate not taste disaster? Isn't each person consigned to forced labor on earth? Are not his days like those of a hired worker? Like a slave, he longs for shade. Like a hired worker, he waits for his pay. So I have been made to inherit months of futility, and troubled nights have been assigned to me. When I lie down, I think, when will I get up? But the evening drags on endlessly, and I toss and turn until dawn. My flesh is clothed with maggots and encrusted with dirt. My skin forms scabs and then oozes. My days pass more swiftly than a weaver's shuttle. They come to an end without hope. Remember that my life is but a breath. My eye will never again see anything good. The eye of anyone who looks on me will no longer see me. Your eyes will look for me, but I will be gone. As a cloud fades away and vanishes, so the one who goes down to Sheol will never rise again. He will never return to his house. His hometown will no longer remember him. Therefore, I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. Am I the sea or a sea monster that you keep me under guard? When I say my bed will comfort me and my couch will ease my complaint, then you frighten me with dreams and terrify me with visions so that I prefer strangling, death rather than life in this body. I give up. I will not live forever. Leave me alone, for my days are a breath. What is a mere human that you think so highly of him and pay so much attention to him? You inspect him every morning and put him to the test every moment. Will you ever look away from me or leave me alone long enough to swallow? If I have sinned, what have I done to you, watcher of humanity? Why have you made me your target so that I have become a burden to you. Why not forgive my sin and pardon my iniquity? For soon I will lie down in the grave. You will eagerly seek me, but I will be gone. First Corinthians 14, 18 through 40. I thank God that I speak in tongues more than all of you. Yet in the church, I would rather speak five words with my understanding in order to teach others also than 10,000 words in a tongue. Brothers and sisters, don't be childish in your thinking, but be infants in regard to evil and adult in your thinking. It is written in the law, I will speak to this people by people of other tongues and by the lips of foreigners, and even then they will not listen to me, says the Lord. Speaking in tongues then is intended as a sign, not for believers but for unbelievers, while prophecy is not for unbelievers but for believers. If therefore the whole church assembles together and all are speaking in tongues and people who are outsiders or unbelievers come in, will they not say that you are out of your minds? But if all are prophesying and some unbeliever or outsider comes in, he is convicted by all and is called to account by all. The secrets of his heart will be revealed, and as a result, he will fall face down and worship God, proclaiming, God is really among you. What then, brothers and sisters? Whenever you come together, each one has a hymn, a teaching, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. Everything is to be done for building up. If anyone speaks in a tongue, there are to be only two or at most three, each in turn, and let someone interpret. But if there is no interpreter, that person is to keep silent in the church and speak to himself and God. Two or three prophets should speak, and the other should evaluate. But if something has been revealed to another person sitting there, the first prophet should be silent. For you can all prophesy one by one, so that everyone may learn and everyone may be encouraged. And the prophets' spirits are subject to the prophets, since God is not a God of discord, but of peace. As in all the churches of the saints, the women should be silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but are to submit themselves, as the law also says. If they want to learn something, let them ask their own husbands at home, since it is disgraceful for a woman to speak in the church. Or did the word of God originate from you? Or did it come to you only? If anyone thinks he is a prophet or spiritual, he should recognize that what I write to you is the Lord's command. If anyone ignores this, he will be ignored. So then, my brothers and sisters, be eager to prophesy, and do not forbid speaking in tongues. But everything is to be done decently and in order. Psalm 37, 30 through 40. The mouth of the righteous utters wisdom. His tongue speaks what is just. The instruction of his God is in his heart. His steps do not falter. The wicked one lies in wait for the righteous and intends to kill him. The Lord will not leave him in the power of the wicked one, or allow him to be condemned when he is judged. Wait for the Lord, and keep his way, and he will exalt you to inherit the land. You will watch when the wicked are destroyed. I have seen a wicked, violent person, well-rooted, like a flourishing native tree. Then I passed by and noticed he was gone. I searched for him, but he could not be found. Watch the blameless and observe the upright, for the person of peace will have a future, but transgressors will all be eliminated. The future of the wicked will be destroyed. The salvation of the righteous is from the Lord, their refuge in a time of distress. The Lord helps and delivers them. He will deliver them from the wicked and will save them, because they take refuge in Him. Proverbs 21:27. The sacrifice of a wicked person is detestable. How much more so when he brings it with ulterior motives? Okay, so yesterday we got ourselves into the book of Job. And, well, I mean, we observed a tragedy that is unspeakable. Like a systematic things that happened to Job that destroyed his life. We would, like in our modern vernacular, we would call what happened to Job in such a succession, like complex PTSD. One thing after the other, trauma after trauma after trauma. Any one of them would be very, very difficult to overcome. But all of them cumulatively have like completely destroyed his life. And so Job is in a life very quickly that he cannot recognize anymore. Nothing is familiar. Even his own face is not familiar, which might sound familiar to some of us. But it's hard to imagine enduring a worse season than Job, which is really the point of the work here, which makes his response to everything. Like, once it gets to the death of his own children, he has truly lost everything, his riches, his possessions, his people, and his children. He tears his robe. Okay, that's a sign in antiquity of grief, but we can all, like, appreciate how we might respond. Maybe we would tear our clothes, but in some way there would be an outpouring of some sort of visible demonstration of shock and grief. And he fell to the ground. And we can understand that. He fell to the ground. We may have had those moments in our own lives. He fell to the ground and worshiped God. That is remarkable. That is, like, I've never come to that passage and not been humbled by it. It is truly remarkable and truly beautiful. I came naked from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That is profound. Like, some of the most profound, that is one of the most profound scenes I have read in anything, anywhere. And that is the 21st time in a row every year that I've read that, and I think I'm more humbled by it every year that I live. And that has not always been how I've responded. But that is the purpose of the work here in this book, is, well, is for us to grapple with. So three of Job's closest friends, they live at a distance from him, and they've heard what's happened. And so somehow they get word to each other, like, let's go. We gotta go check on Job. And they're not doing it individually. And so they meet up and come together to be with him in his grief and the pain and the anguish. And when they see him, they don't recognize him. I mean, some of these things, if we put them into our own contexts and our own lives, we can so deeply relate to somebody who's gone through something so bad that when we do see them, they don't look the same. Or maybe that's us. And when someone comes to comfort us, we're not the same. Life as we knew it has ended, but new life has not come yet. And so we really are in the in-between. We are in the absolute ashes of what has burned down all around us. And for those moments, there really is nothing else and nothing left. Because it's too soon to imagine that there could be new hope. The pain is too blinding. We cannot even breathe. And so they don't even recognize him. And they sat with him for a whole week without saying anything. That is an ancient Hebrew tradition called Shiva. That is sitting Shiva. That is a response to grief. That is to not offer words. Right? That is to not come to the friend that you cannot recognize anymore because of the pain that they are going through, and in your own uncomfortability, and not being able to process, and your own fear that that could happen to you, to fill the room with words like, God has a plan. You know, keep your chin up, fight through. Something good will come out of this. Everything happens for a reason. Man, if you are the one that has been broken, that does not help. That actually hurts. So this ancient tradition of Shiva is truly quite beautiful, because that is offering your presence and nothing more. You surround that person by love and care, and do not fill the room or the world with words in your own discomfort. You just sit there in it, in the tension of it, being a witness to the complete and utter devastation of a person's life. And then if they want to talk, then the conversation happens. And if they go silent again, they don't have any pressure to take care of you because of your discomfort, or process through your trivial, trite words of encouragement that do not help in the moment. The attention isn't on making anything better. It's not on explaining anything. The devastation, the shock, the grief, the loss is allowed to be exactly what it is. But then, of course, the conversation in the book of Job does begin. And Job pours out the anguish of his soul, wishing like that the day of his conception never happened. That night of romance never occurred. That he would just be wiped away from existence. and anyone who's experienced any kind of complex PTSD. You know, you may not be suicidal or anything like that, but the pain, anything for the pain to stop, just wishing it would stop, wishing that it could go away, that maybe you could just not be, maybe it wouldn't have never been. If you had never been, then this never would have happened. It is a very complicated, mind-twisting thing when you are overwhelmed and completely flooded in ways that you, like your entire brain is not online and you cannot process past, present, or future. You can just be in absolute blinding pain. And so this is what we see Job going through. So Job has a friend named Eliphaz who's trying to comfort him. And he's essentially telling Job that things happen for a reason. And that if you would just trust in God, then God would come rescue and restore him. Which sounds so familiar. We say these kinds of things when we're attempting to be a voice of comfort. And we'll see that throughout the entire book of Job. His friends will attempt to reason and comfort Job. And they will become more and more agitated in their efforts because Job wants something that they cannot give. Because at this point, Job doesn't need some kind of comfort from a human trivial perspective, some kind of, you know, Hallmark card sentiment. When his whole life is burned down around him and he's sitting in ashes, he doesn't want human explanations that smooth out the hard reality of what has happened to him. What Job wants is for God to explain exactly what he did wrong to incur the judgment that he feels he's experiencing. He says, God struck me down with his arrows, and their poison infects my spirit. God's terrors are lined up against me. Don't I have a right to complain? And that happens when the bottom has fallen out of life and everything really has collapsed into rubble and ash. And everything in you is just gone. And it is so easy, I know from experience, to very quickly become estranged from God. Because how could he let that happen? You're his child. How could he let that happen to you? So in the coming days, well, I mean, for most of the rest of the book, we'll be experiencing a lot of the conversation that takes place between Job and his friends. And if we'll pay close attention, we'll find ourselves on both sides of that. We'll be able to identify with the suffering and confusion and trauma of Job. We'll also hear our own voices in the counsel that his friends are trying to offer. And we'll see this conversation, and we may have even experienced this in life, but we'll see the conversation turn from comfort to debate to frustration to arguments, and we'll be taken through the different aspects of our own suffering and begin to wonder who's right, which is the point. So let's stay connected to this story. The Bible has led us here and guides us into suffering and reveals that we know far less than we think we do, whether we are in agony or whether we are trying to bring comfort. And so, Holy Spirit, we invite you into that. We invite you, regardless of where we may be in our lives, but I know that in a community like ours, this is hitting. And all of us, in some way, resonate. And some of us are sitting in the ashes. And this comes at a time when we feel so alone that, ironically, this brings comfort to know that. This is ancient, and this is human, and this has been happening, and we're not the only one, even though it feels that way. And so, Holy Spirit, come. Even as we fall to the ground and try to somehow believe you're there, and somehow to say, you gave and it has been taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
May the day perish on which I was born. May the stars of its morning be dim. Why is life given to the bitter of soul, or to those who stand in anger of him?
Oh, he pierces my heart and does not pity. He breaks me with wound upon. Turn me to dust again soon. The sea.